welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara Kopinski. On today's show, Louise Miller joins me to discuss her new book, The Late Bloomers Club. We chatted about the book's Gilmore Girls feel, her advice for aspiring writers, a very special upcoming bake-off, and more. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Louise Miller, welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm so happy to get to speak with you.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, congratulations on the new book, The Late Bloomers Club. It was such a delight to read.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, I had just the perfect summer reading experience with it. I had the good luck. My library hold for The Late Bloomers Club came up right before a vacation I took to Maine, so I brought it along. And it's just one of those times I think readers can probably relate to where the book kind of makes the trip, and I stayed up late reading on the porch, and it was just so wonderful. And, I went right out and got the City Baker's Guide, so that was really great. So I read them a little bit out of order, but just loved them both so much.
Oh, thank you so much. That sounds like a dream trip.
It really was. And so they're not, The Late Bloomers Club's not a sequel, but they are both set in small town in Vermont. The town is called Guthrie. For people who haven't read the books yet, could you just talk a little bit about what Guthrie is like?
Sure. So it is a small town in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, which is a place, the Northeast Kingdom is a real place, but Guthrie is a fictional town. And it's just a lot, it's kind of my idyllic northern New England town. It's a place where there's a fair amount of gossip, and but there's a lot of community support, and people look out for each other, and it's in a really rural area, so it kind of contains all of my favorite things about Vermont. And yeah, it was a real joy to create, honestly. Like, I knew I didn't want to set the book in a real place because I was very conscious of the fact that I was not writing like a really like realistic portrait of Vermont. So I didn't want to be, I didn't want to falsely portray a town. So I knew that the place was pretty idyllic. So it was really fun to make up my own place.
Yeah, well, it's such a fun world to escape into. I think that's one of the things I love the most about the book and about both of them. And right away at the start of The Late Bloomers Club, you get that sense, Nora, who runs the Miss Guthrie Diner, she's talking to all the regulars, you're hearing the local gossip, and just everyone seems to know each other so well. At one point, she's thinking to herself, oh, I know the sheriff just separated from his wife, so I'm going to give him these shepherd's pie leftovers for lunch so he has something to eat. And it just gives you that that feeling that you want to be a part of this community and hear all their stories. And, I've heard the Gilmore Girls comparison a lot, which I am a huge Gilmore Girls fan, and I definitely felt that. It has such that charming Stars Hollow vibe, which is so wonderful. And one of the things I think really jumped out, given all that, is that whole idea of your neighbors sort of becoming family, and that really comes through in both of the books. Is that something that you were thinking about a lot when you were writing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always really interested in just the way we're all connected, and especially in, it's funny because I've actually never lived in a rural place, but I live in a neighborhood of Boston. Boston's very, neighborhoody, and that I feel like it functions as a small town. Mm-hmm. And so there's a real sense of, you have your separate lives, but you do rely on each other. And that's something I really love and wanted to explore more. Especially because for me, I've been in my neighborhood for 26 years, but everyone else always changes. I don't really have that experience too much because it's kind of constantly in flux. But yeah, so I definitely dream about living in a place. And I'm really interested in kind of the good and bad sides of that. I think it's definitely challenging, you know, for people to know your business and to,
right.
You know, to not have that anonymity that you have in a city. So yeah, so I liked playing in both of the books, playing with kind of the really great parts of that and also the kind of not so great parts of that.
Right. And it also is so interesting. You almost get two different versions of that because in the City Baker's Guide, Livy, for people who haven't read it, she's this Boston baker and she starts over in Guthrie. So she's really coming to the town as an outsider and viewing it in that way. And then in the Late Bloomers Club, Nora has lived there all her life and never left. So you sort of get those two really different views of small town life, which I thought was really interesting.
That's great. Yeah, I was really excited. I definitely didn't want to write a sequel to City Baker, but I really loved making the town and I didn't feel quite like done with the town. So it was really, really fun to try to, you know, come at it from a really different perspective.
And even in the Late Bloomers Club, one thing I noticed, even in Nora's own family, you get sort of those different views of the town. Her sister Kit is sort of the cast as the adventurous sibling in the family, and Nora is sort of seen as the more like responsible one who stayed home. And so that was sort of an interesting way to get to see the dynamics too. And I was sort of curious between the siblings, and I guess even between like Livy and Nora, is there a character that you related to most as you were writing?
Yeah, it's funny. I think out of all of my characters, I think the character I relate to most is Margaret in The City Baker,
oh,
who's like
she's my
elderly.
Favorite.
Oh, that's nice.
I love
Margaret. I do too. She's a tough nut. So she was actually hard for me to write, I think, because I related to her. But yeah, no, there's definitely, I mean, I always say like there really is, you know, a piece of me in all the characters. I'm definitely, I don't know, I'm definitely a little bit more of a Nora than a Kit, but I was the baby in my family, so I definitely came at Kit with a real understanding of what it means to be the youngest.
Yeah, you definitely, the dynamics feel really realistic, for
sure.
Oh, good.
That's great.
Yeah, and just to go back to Margaret for a second, I wanted to ask, again, I loved Margaret, and the whole relationship that unfolds between Livy and Margaret, I just thought was so interesting and, you know, heartwarming as it goes on. And I kept thinking their dynamic in a lot of ways reminded me of Marilla and Anne from Anne of Green Gables.
Oh,
and
that's so interesting.
I was just curious if that had been a book that had been an influence at all.
You know, I've actually never read it.
Interesting.
But now I want to. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be.
That'd be really fun.
Yeah, I think Margaret and Marilla would be friends. They're kindred spirits,
oh,
I think.
So
you know, just on the outside, they seem so stern, but, you know, once you get to know them more and they're both so loyal. And yeah, I think that would be an interesting one to add to your reading list.
Oh, I definitely will. I love to go back and read those classics. It's so fun. But yeah, it's funny because people talked, you know, the City Baker was referred to a lot as like a romance, which really surprised me. And of course there is like a central love story to the book. But to me, like secretly, like the real love story in City Baker is Livy and Margaret, you know, and just this kind of familial love. I loved every time the two of them were in the same room. I had so much fun writing those scenes.
Well, that so comes through as a reader. I was just sitting there smiling, reading their scenes. And for people who did read The City Baker's Guide first and are now coming to the Late Bloomers Club, you do see Margaret a little bit again and Alfred. So that's exciting. But, you know, I'm curious, you know, your books have really gained a lot of success. I saw you're profiled in People magazine and they're just so wonderful. And I'm sure it's been really exciting to see all that happen. And I'm curious what the journey has been to get here to this point.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to that story, but I can say from the creative end,
I really kind of realized I wanted to be a writer when I was in my early 20s. I was in art school studying photography, and it was like I was in art school, but my favorite class was English. And I've always been a journal writer, like from little. And I've always, gone to words to kind of sort out how I'm feeling and to try to understand things. And I've always been a reader. But it wasn't until I was leaving, I dropped out of art school that I realized that like writing was probably the thing I really wanted to do. But I wasn't like a real great student in high school, and I just didn't really have an academic background at all, and I just didn't really know where to start. And so I had signed up for my first creative writing class when I had moved back to Boston, and then right before my class started, my father passed away, and that, like any big loss, just kind of shifted my focus completely. But I just always dreamt about writing for years and years and years. But it was like the longer I didn't do it, the bigger this idea of like writing became, like capital W writing. So I had to work through a lot of just fear around it, and just fear that, like, I didn't go to school, I didn't have an MFA, like I just didn't have any of that background that I for somehow decided all writers have. But when I was in my late 30s, I came to a point where I just, 40 was around the corner, and I had just experienced some big losses in our family, and I just kind of realized, like, let's try it or let it go, because I was tired of thinking of it. And so yeah, I signed up for an adult ed class in Cambridge and wrote the what ended up being the first chapter of City Breaker. So I'm very much a late bloomer on my own. A long time to kind of just get, sometimes I think you really just need to get beyond yourself, like your own fears. So I'm always encouraging people to A, that it's really not too late. You could start anytime, and but B, just to pursue anything that you have a little spark of interest in. 'Cause I just feel like it's such a good part of life. It's such a wonderful, for me, writing has just become such a rich and like great part of my life. So I'm so grateful I tried, that I didn't let it go.
It seems like for the Late Bloomers Club, that whole experience would be something you would be drawing on for Nora's story. Could you talk about that a
Absolutely.
little bit and sort of where she is at the start of the book, thinking about her life?
Yeah, absolutely. So something that I was kind of the initial spark of the story was thinking a lot about me. I'm the youngest of four, and I'm thinking a lot about as you get older, I think we get stuck in roles in our family, and they play out. Like I know whenever I get, when I go visit my mom or I'm with my sisters, I immediately become like the little sister. And I think it was like, I had to turn 40 before my family stopped being like, don't tell Louise, like she can't handle
I'm that
it.
person in my family, so I'll hope that eventually that goes away as well.
Hopefully, eventually, yeah, you have to work at it.
Yep.
So I was thinking a lot about how as we get older, we start to be able to see our parents and see our siblings just as whole people, and so then you realize that all of your assumptions about their lives and assumptions about, how things are for them change because you just naturally have more empathy. So I was going in really thinking about, so Nora at the beginning of the story is the responsible one. She, at a really young age, had to take on a lot of responsibility in her family, helping to raise Kit and taking care of her mother who has cancer, and then had taken care of her father and taking care of the family business. And so she's all of her any dreams that she's ever had have really been set aside, to the point where, she really, even though now she's at a point where her parents have passed and she really could do anything, she's very trapped in like her mindset of, who she is and what she does. And I think that she really, there's a lot that she really loves about her life, but there's that feeling of never having had the choice in her mind and not really having gotten the chance to explore what she wanted.
And so here she has this sister who just took off when she was young and is full of adventure and is very creative and has had a really, you know, from Nora's point of view, a really big life. But I very much at the beginning wanted both Kit and Nora to have be stuck in their old assumptions of each other, and to, for both of them, for their arcs of the story, to really be able to come to see each other in the new light, and through that process get to see themselves in a new light and kind of what the potential was for their own lives. Really, so that was very personal for me, in the sense that, like, it's inspired by my own experiences with my sisters. And,
Well, it's interesting that what sort of spurs them to look at themselves in a new light, or at least for Nora to look at herself in a new light, is realizing she has to look at her neighbor in a new way, at Peggy the Cake Lady, who to her is just Peggy the Cake Lady. But when Peggy passes away and she inherits the house and starts to learn more about her, it's interesting to sort of see that unfold, that Peggy's not who she really seems.
Yeah, I love that. That was really fun for me, too. I think something I love the most about life is I just feel like everyone is full of surprises, you know, and I'm always really happy when I'm wrong about someone and I get to, you know, like, discover weird little things that they do or things that they're into. Like, I just think that's so much fun. And so it was really fun for me to kind of, I really tried to give everyone, like, even the secondary characters, their own things that they're kind of late blooming about, and also their own weird little interests. So for things for people to discover.
One thing that really came through, you know, in both books, a lot of the characters have these different creative pursuits, whether it's baking or cooking or being a musician or a filmmaker. Is that something that has been a theme throughout your whole life? I know, you're also a pastry chef and you write. I mean, it just seems like you're exploring creativity in so many different ways.
Yeah, that's definitely been a huge part of my life. And I'm also just one of those people that I really believe that just as humans, we're creative. And and I really think everyone has something, whether they really are pursuing it or consider themselves artists or not. And so something that was kind of in the back of my mind that I feel like Nora is going through is Kit has very easily, like, claimed her creative self. And I think that Nora is very creative and she is an artist, but it's something that she doesn't really own. And that's another thing I wanted Nora to have an experience of through the book. But yeah, I really believe everyone has a thing, you know, or two,
I agree.
Or three.
Yeah.
I mean, I really, like, I find for myself, like, I mean, I'm very lucky to have a creative life where my job is very creative and I get to write and I also play a little music and I do, like, a tiny bit of visual arts, like, not as much as I'd like to, but to me, it all feeds each other. So I really, like, when I'm writing a lot, I always really want to play banjo, and I always, like, really want to play banjo because it just, like, opens up different parts of your brain, I think.
Well, and I can see for you, I mean, the one of the things that's so wonderful about the books is all of the descriptions of food and how carefully woven that is. And
it's actually really fun. I mean, when I was writing City Baker, I think part of why I wrote about a pastry shop was I just was so busy trying to figure out how to write a novel that, like, it was so nice to be able to lean on details that I'm very familiar with. I've been baking for 25 years. So, but what I did notice that was it had writing about baking had this great effect on my baking where it really slowed me down and it made me pay a lot more attention than I normally do just because I've been doing it for so long. So I had, like, a really nice relationship both ways, I think, where, like, both were influencing the other. But it was a delight. I mean, I was really, like, I love baking and I love my weird kitchen world. And so it was really fun for me to get to share little bits of it. It's like, that's just really fun.
So you juggle a lot in terms of your work as a pastry chef and a writer. Could you talk a little bit about, like, what a typical day for you is like with all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really funny. I was just talking to a friend
the other day because my work, I work at a private club like Livy does at the beginning of City Baker, and our summers are really dead. And I just find, like, I was just saying, like, I can't wait for it to get busy at work because I get more writing done. There's something about, like, momentum. Like, if I'm really busy, I have to really make sure the writing time is there. Whereas in the summer, I'm just like, I feel like I'll just get to it and I don't do anything. So on a typical day, like, if it's busy, like, in the fall, like, I usually get to work around 6, and I'll work from 6 to 2. And then I belong to a private library in Boston called the Boston Athenaeum, which is a very cool space. It's just beautiful. It looks like a museum, and it's literally 3 doors down from my job. So
that's wonderful.
So that's the thing, is like, no excuses. There's like nothing fun in between my job and the library. So when I'm when I'm really diligently working, it's just like no choice. Work, go to the library. So I'll go to the library between, you know, usually like 2:30, and I'll stay till around 6, and still gives me a little bit of time to be like a regular person.
Well, I think that's really inspiring, you, just the way you managed to carve out that time. And I think the excuse a lot of us make is, I just don't have time, but
you just
make it. And
I had that, you know, I'll tell you, it's actually kind of funny because I had the same excuse. I felt like I didn't have time. And I was busy, you know, I worked full time, and then I also had a part-time job, and then I had a dog. And the way, actually, one of the big reasons why I started writing was, this is kind of a crazy story, but my most beloved dog got cancer, and we were told he only had like 3 to 4 months to live. And so I like quit my second job, and I pared down my hours at my regular job, and I just was like, I'll just give him like a great 3 to 4 months, you know, I'll spend the most time with him that I can. But what happened was, is he, very thankfully, he lived for 1.5 years. And I discovered, you know, kind of halfway through that, I was like, you know, like, if you want to make the time, you'll make the time, you know, like, so I couldn't get rid of like the illusion that I didn't have time, because when something was really important to me, I made it happen.
Yeah.
So I just promised myself when he passed away that I would take that same time and put it towards writing, that I wouldn't let it get filled up with all the other extra stuff. And, you know, I don't have children, so it's easy for me that way. I really admire my writing parent friends, because that's intense. But I really, like, my biggest advice for people really is, if you want to write a novel, if you write one page, double space, 12-point font, is 250 words. And if you write a page a day, you'll have a novel draft in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really easy to write 250 words. It's really like, it doesn't take too much time. So when I was, I actually did a class, there's a writing center in Boston called Grub Street, and I did a year-long like revision workshop for novelists. And it was very time-consuming program. And at the same time, for some reason that year at work, I worked more hours than I ever had. It was like I had a record year. And so I had to learn. I used to be really, really precious about when I wrote. Like, it was like no one could be home and all the laundry had to be done and I had to have like a candle and like all these things had to be in place. So I never did it. And so in that program, I really learned to write like 20 minutes in the women's dressing room on my lunch break. You know, like, you
That's
can get
awesome.
A paragraph done, you know, so I really like, it's now I have a better sense of kind of how to make it happen for myself. But I think it's, you have to kind of trick yourself a little bit. But I think the biggest mistake, I think we all have a tendency to create rules for ourselves and then feel really locked into them. So I think that just no amount of time is too little. And if you can't do it every day, like a lot of people say, you have to write every day, but no, you don't. I have a friend that wrote 2 novels on the weekends, you know? So it's like just finding what works for you is the most important thing.
I think that mindset shift is really important. Just, I feel like that's something I've been exploring a lot this year. Just, it's kind of eliminating that phrase, I don't have the time, from my vocabulary.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, what do I want to prioritize with the time?
Right.
I think that's important.
Right.
Well, one of the things I read sort of in other advice to aspiring writers, you had said to write what you love to read. And I was curious, if that is the case, what are some of your favorite books that you would recommend to listeners?
Sure. It's funny. I go through a lot of phases with reading, and I read way more widely than I would ever write. But I'm trying to think what I've loved lately. When I think about, I always feel like how I write, I never know how to describe it, but it falls into this, like, this little space. Like, I love Marissa de los Santos, who wrote her New York Times. She had a New York Times bestseller, which I will just completely belong to me, was a big book of hers. I love her. She was one of the first authors I read that I felt like she could write about serious things, but also there was so much joy in her book. Like, her books, I just love them. Anne Patchett's my superhero. She can do no wrong.
Yeah.
And I just, the thing about her that cracks me up is whenever I read any description of her books, they're never stories I think I want to read. So now I always are completely obsessed with them. So I'll just read, I'll go anywhere she wants to go.
Yes.
And then, oh gosh, there's so many people. I love JoJo Moyes. I loved her, you know, I love all of her books, but my favorite of hers, I think, isn't as widely read, and it's called The Last Letter from Your Lover. And it's this incredible book that is about a modern day reporter that finds these letters from World War II, and it's part historical, it's part mystery, it's a love story. It's just like this incredibly, like, gorgeous and complex book that's so much fun.
Oh, that's great. I've read a lot of her books, but I don't think I that one doesn't sound familiar. So I'll have to look that
that's
up.
My favorite. Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, you also have, I was looking at your website, you have, for those of us in the Boston area, we're very spoiled. You have so many amazing events coming up, and you're going to be at the Boston Book Festival and at lots of bookstores. But there were two in particular that just sounded so wonderful. You have one coming up at Belmont Books on September 15th and another at Silver Unicorn on November 17th. And they are both food related. And I was wondering if you could talk about those.
Yes, these are both going to be a ball. So I'm very, very excited. So Belmont Books on September 15th, I am judging a cake baking contest.
That's so fun.
It's really fun. We actually had a pie contest for the paperback release of City Baker, and
it was
so much fun that we wanted to do it again. So it's really open. There's the instructions on how to enter are on the Belmont Books website. But basically, people bring cakes, and it's wide open, any kind of cake. And what will happen is I will do a short reading, and like that will be cake related. And I'll sign books and do questions and answers. But then myself and two other judges will judge the cakes, and we have prizes. There'll be copies of the books, and also I think like bookstore gift certificates and gift certificates to the kitchen store next door, Diedrich's.
That sounds amazing.
So it was the pie contest was so much fun, and I was so impressed by the pies. So, but anyone can come. You don't have to enter the contest. You can totally come and eat cake, because there ends up being way more cake than there are people to eat cake. So,
I marked my calendar for this one. It sounds amazing.
Oh, good. And then, Unicorn Books in Acton, Massachusetts. We are doing a dinner with a catering company. I think it's called Orange Table, that's next door to the bookstore. And I'm doing it with two other authors, Jenna Blum, whose book The Lost Family is just come out, I think, in June. And then Crystal King, she's this incredible historical novel about the first cookbook that takes place, facing what Italian place it takes place, in Italy. but anyway, her book is called Feast of Sorrow. And Crystal has another book coming out early next year that is in Renaissance France, that's also food related. So what they're doing is they're taking recipes inspired by each of our books, and those are going to be the courses for the meal. And so Crystal, Jenna, and I will be there, and we will switch tables during, you know, for each course to get to talk to all the people, and it should be really fun.
It's so great.
So that's going to be a really fun event.
Yeah, I got to talk to the owner, Silver Unicorn, for the podcast, and
wonderful.
And he's really excited forward to it. I think they're doing some really exciting community events. So
that's really,
really
fun
awesome
stuff. Yeah, that's great. And yeah, it's been really fun. This go with this book, I've done, you know, traditional book events, but I'm a sucker for these different kind of events. I did a dinner in Buttonwood Books in Cohasset, where we had dinner in the bookstore, and and then I did an in conversation with an author that I had never met, and that was really fun. So we had read
That's
each other's
so cool
books. Yeah, it was great.
Well, I'm excited to see you have so many events coming up. I will definitely link to those in the show notes and on the blog, and it's just been so wonderful speaking with you.
I'll just speak to you too.
And where can people find you if they want to follow you and learn more about your book?
Oh, that'd be great. I'm kind of everywhere. So I am Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Louise the Baker.
Okay.
And then I do have an author Facebook page, which I think is just, you know, facebook.com/LouiseMillerAuthor. And my website, per se, is on Tumblr. So that's Louise Miller Author as well. And they all eventually link to each other. So on the Tumblr page, there's a contact link. So you can email me or tweet at me. I'm very easy to find.
Wonderful. And I'll link to all of that as well.
Oh, it'd be great.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And again, congratulations on the new book. It's just really wonderful, and I'm excited to recommend it to everyone.
This is wonderful. I can't thank you enough for inviting me.
For more information on the Late Bloomers Club, you can head to Louise Miller's website, louisemilleraauthor.tumblr.com, or look for it at your favorite local bookstore or library. And if you read the Late Bloomers Club or the City Baker's Guide, and love them as much as I do, reach out. You can find me on Twitter at A Bookish Home. For more book recommendations and literary happenings, you can visit my blog, abookishhome.com, and be sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoy the podcast, share it with a friend or on social media, and rate and review in iTunes. It would be so helpful. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.